Have you ever found yourself staring at a massive steel structure? I don't know, maybe you're stuck in traffic on a suspension bridge, or looking at the hull of a ship, and you just wonder, what is actually holding this thing together?
It gives you this comforting sense of continuity, doesn't it?
It really does.
You look at a welded joint and your brain just tells you this is one single monolithic piece of material.
Yeah.
It feels unbreakable.
Exactly. It feels like a rock. But today, we are going to completely shatter that illusion. We're zooming in way, way past the surface and down into the microscopic hidden architecture of the steel itself. Because it turns out, underneath that smooth, cold surface, there is this complex geometric world that looks, I mean, less like a rock and more like a mathematical honeycomb.
It really is a hidden world. And the fascinating thing is understanding that geometry isn't just some, you know, abstract academic exercise. That microscopic structure, the shapes you can't even see, that's what dictates whether the ship floats or sinks, or whether a high-pressure pipeline holds together or bursts. If engineers don't get the shape of the grains deep inside that weld, the strength of the whole thing is just, it's a giant question mark.
That is a terrifying thought, but also kind of cool.
Yeah.
And to guide us through this microscopic landscape, we are doing a deep dive into a classic piece of material science research.
Okay.
We're looking at a paper titled "The Austenite Grain Structure of Low Alloy Steel Weld Deposits." It was written by HKDH Padeshia from the University of Cambridge, along with Ellie Svensson and B. Gretoft from ESAB in Sweden.
This paper is a bit of a heavyweight in the field. It tackles a very specific and very difficult problem.
Which is?
How do you measure the shape of something that is invisible, three-dimensional, and, you know, buried inside a solid block of metal? We're talking geometry, 3D visualization, and honestly, a lot of detective work.
And spoiler alert, we're also going to find out that a lot of conventional wisdom about purity in metals might be, well, totally wrong when it comes to welding.
It's a great twist.
But let's start with the basics. When I think of a grain in something, I think of wood. Wood has a grain. You sand with it, you split along it. Does steel actually have a grain like that?
It does, but it's much more mathematical than wood. You see, metals are crystalline. When molten steel cools and turns solid, it doesn't just freeze into some generic block.
Okay.
It forms crystals. We call these individual crystals grains. Now, in a normal piece of metal, say a sheet of steel that's been rolled out, those grains are usually what we call equiaxed.
Equiaxed. That sounds like equal axis.
That's exactly it. It's a fancy way of saying they're roughly spherical.
Spherical?
Yeah, they're like a bunch of marbles packed together in a jar. They have the same dimensions roughly in all directions.
Okay, marbles in a jar. That's easy to picture. If I cut a marble in half, I see a circle. Cut it from the top, I see a circle. Same shape no matter how I look.
Precisely. Measuring the size of a marble is easy. The diameter is the diameter. But welding changes everything, especially the kind we're looking at here, submerged arc welding. This is a high heat process for thick steel plates. When you dump that much heat in to melt the metal and then let it cool, the grains do not form like marbles.
Because of how the heat moves.
Right.
It's not cooling evenly from all sides.
Exactly right. The heat is escaping in a very specific direction, away from the hot weld pool and down into the cold base plate. And the crystals, they want to grow along that heat path. They follow the thermal gradient.
So instead of spheres, you get these long, stretched out shapes.
Yes, they become columnar.
So we aren't dealing with marbles anymore. We're dealing with pillars.
No, marbles are gone. And this is where the paper draws a beautiful analogy to help us visualize it. Imagine you have a bundle of pencils.
Okay.
But not round pencils, hexagonal pencils.
Right, those classic yellow hexagonal ones. I'm picturing a handful of them held tight in a bundle.
Now imagine that bundle represents the grains in the weld. They're long, thin prisms packed perfectly together. This is the model Badeshia and his colleagues proposed. They suggested that the austenite grains are essentially a honeycomb of hexagonal prisms.
I love this visual. But why hexagons? Why not squares or something?
Nature loves efficiency. If you try to pack circles together, you get gaps.
True.
But hexagons, they fit together perfectly. It's the most efficient way for these crystals to pack as they grow alongside each other.
So if I take that bundle of pencils and I slice it right across the middle, perpendicular to the pencils, what I'm going to see is a honeycomb pattern. Just a bunch of hexagons.
Correct. That's a transverse section. But, and here's the massive headache with a measurement, what if you cut the bundle lengthwise?
Then I wouldn't see hexagons at all. I'd just see long parallel strips, like a barcode.
Right. And what if you cut it at a 45-degree angle?
Oh, that would be weird. distorted. You get these stretched out shapes like diamonds or squashed ovals.
Exactly. And that is why measuring grain size in a weld is so difficult. If you just take one random slice, you have no idea what you're actually measuring.
It's the old story of the blind men and the elephant.
It's a perfect analogy.
Depending on where you touch, or in this case, where you cut, you think it's something totally different.
In material science, we call this the problem of stereology, trying to reconstruct a 3D object from 2D slices. And it leads to this concept of anisotropy.
Meaning?
The material has different properties in different directions. So the mission of this paper was to prove that this hexagonal prism model is actually accurate.
So they didn't just guess and say, hey, it looks like pencils. They actually built a mathematical model.
They did. They defined two key dimensions. First, the C axis. Think of C as the length of the pencil aligned with the heat flow.
Okay, C is length.
And then there's the A dimension, which is the side length of that little hexagon cross section.
A is width. Got it.
And they developed equations 1 through 5 in the paper to predict something called the mean lineal intercept.
Mean lineal intercept. That sounds incredibly technical.
It's simpler than it sounds. Imagine you take a microscope photo of the grains. Then you draw a random straight line across it. You just count how many grain boundaries, the edges of the hexagons that line crosses.
Okay, so if the grains are small, I cross a lot of lines. If they're big, I cross fewer.
That's it. The mean lineal intercept is just the average distance between those boundaries. The researchers calculated what that number should be for a transverse cut, a longitudinal cut, and a 45-degree cut, assuming the grains were perfect hexagons.
So they have the prediction. Now they had to test it. And I noticed the paper was from around 1985, 1986. So we aren't talking about modern AI scanning here.
No, but they were using state-of-the-art tech for the time. They mentioned a Quantumet 720 image analyzing computer.
The Quantumet 720. Sounds like something from a sci-fi movie. Computer, analyze.
It was a huge deal back then. But even with the computer, it was a lot of manual work. They had to take micrographs at 100 times magnification. And often, the contrast wasn't perfect, so they had to manually trace the grain boundaries.
Wow. So someone sat there tracing tiny hexagons by hand.
For hours, it shows the dedication. They examined 3 specific planes to get a true 3D understanding. They didn't take shortcuts.
Okay, so they have the model, the math, and now they need the metal. The researchers created 2 specific welds, right? Weld 1 and Weld 2.
Yes, and this is where the story gets really interesting. This wasn't just about geometry anymore. It was about chemistry.
Right.
They made 2 submerged arc welds, kept all the parameters the same, but they changed the flux on the wire slightly to alter the chemical composition.
And the big difference was oxygen.
Oxygen and titanium, but oxygen is the key player. Weld 1 was what we might call dirty. It had a high oxygen content, 418 parts per million.
418 ppm.
Got it. And Weld 2.
Weld 2 was the clean one, low oxygen, only 121 parts per million. Okay, so we have a dirty weld and a clean weld. Now, before we get to the results, what do they expect to happen? Because there's a conventional wisdom about dearth or inclusions in metal, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. Usually, oxygen in steel forms oxides, tiny little particles of dirt trapped in the metal. We call them inclusions. The standard theory, known as the Zener-Pinning effect, suggests these little particles are actually helpful.
Wait, dirt is helpful? You'd think you'd want things pure.
If you want small grains, yes. Imagine the grain boundaries trying to grow. If they hit a little particle of oxide, they get stuck. The particle pins the boundary.
Okay, I see. It's like putting little obstacles in the way of a growing balloon. It can't expand as much because it keeps hitting these rocks.
Perfect analogy. It's like a fence. So the hypothesis, the expectation, was that Weld 1, the high oxygen, dirty weld with all those inclusions, would have smaller grains.
And Weld 2, the clean one with no fence, would have grains that grow huge.
That was the expectation. High oxygen, small grains, low oxygen, large grains. That's what the textbooks would tell you.
Okay, hold that thought. First, the geometry. Did the hexagonal pencil model actually work?
For Weld 1, the high oxygen weld, it was almost perfect. The numbers they measured matched the equations from the hexagonal model beautifully. The ratio of the hexagon side to the length was consistent.
So the grains really did look like an ideal honeycomb.
It seems so. Now, Weld 2, the clean weld, was a bit messier. The grains deviated a little from that perfect prism shape.
So not a perfect match.
Not perfect, but the authors noted that for the purpose of modeling surface area per unit volume, which is what really matters, the model was still adequate.
Okay, so the pencil model is a win. We can model these structures, but now, let's go back to the oxygen. the dirty weld versus the clean weld. Did the pinning theory hold up?
This is the aha moment of the paper. This is the big twist.
I'm ready.
It failed completely.
It failed.
The results were the exact opposite of what the pinning theory would predict. The clean weld, weld 2, did not have larger grains.
No.
In fact, it had slightly smaller austenite grains than the dirty weld.
Wait, so having fewer obstacles, fewer inclusions, actually result in smaller grains?
Yeah.
That makes no sense. That's like removing speed bumps and traffic slowing down.
It makes no sense if you're thinking about reheated metal. And this is the crucial distinction. The pinning theory comes from experiments where you take solid steel, heat it up again, and watch the grains grow.
Okay.
In that scenario, things happen relatively slowly. The particles have time to drag on the boundaries. But a weld isn't reheated metal.
It's liquid turning into solid.
Exactly. We're looking at initial solidification. And in these steels, the process is violent and fast. The metal goes from liquid to a phase called delta ferrite and then transforms into austenite.
Delta ferrite to austenite.
Like a transformer. It acts like one. The driving force for that change is massive. It happens aggressively. The crystals nucleate and shoot out so fast that they just swallow the oxide inclusions.
They swallow them?
They grow right past them. The inclusions get trapped inside the crystal, not on the edge to pin the boundary. The boundary is moving with so much energy that a tiny speck of oxide can't stop it.
So the pins are useless because the wall is moving too fast. It's a bulldozer running over a pebble.
Precisely. The authors explain that the chemical driving force is so high that the pressure on the boundary is enormous. The pinning force is just negligible in comparison.
Wow.
So in the as-deposited weld, the cleanliness of the steel doesn't control the grain size via pinning.
That is a huge finding. It basically says, stop applying rules from heat treatment to welding. They're different animals.
It really does. It challenges that assumption that just cleaning up the steel will automatically give you the structure you expect. Mm-hmm. In this case, the cleaner weld had finer grains, which might be due to subtle differences in how the crystals started growing.
So let's look at the numbers. You mentioned the A parameter, the width of the hexagon. How big are we talking?
We are talking micrometers. For weld one, the high oxygen one, A was between 57 and 59 micrometers.
Mm-hmm.
For weld two, the low oxygen one, it was between 45 and 57 micrometers.
So the clean weld was indeed slightly finer.
Yes. And this brings us to the so what of the study. Why do we care about modeling these hexagons?
I assume it's not just for the love of geometry. It's because if you can describe the shape mathematically, you can predict how it behaves.
Exactly. The paper introduces an equation for something called cesspace surface area per unit volume. If you know the surface area of those grain boundaries, you can predict what happens next.
And what does happen next?
As the steel cools further down to room temperature, new microstructures start to grow from those boundaries.
Ah, so the austenite grains are like the scaffolding. The final properties of the steel depend on what grows on that scaffolding.
Perfectly put. If you have a lot of surface area small hexagons, you get one type of microstructure, maybe something tough. If you have huge hexagons, you might get something brittle and prone to cracking.
So being able to plug a hexagon model into a computer simulation allows engineers to predict the final strength of the weld.
It moves metallurgy from cook and look, just trying things out, to actual predictive engineering.
Right.
And it reinforces the importance of that 3D thinking. The paper stresses that because the grains are columnar, a measurement on the surface tells you almost nothing about what's deep inside.
If I just look at the top, I see hexagons. I don't see the long pencils.
And if you're worried about, say, a crack propagating through the weld, the direction matters. The steel is anisotropic. It's stronger in one direction than another. This model gives us a way to quantify that.
It's amazing how much complexity is hidden in a simple joint. We started with marbles in a jar, and we ended up with hexagonal pencils swallowing obstacles due to massive chemical driving forces.
It's a great example of why we have to constantly test our assumptions. The pinning theory is perfectly valid in one context, heat treatment, and completely wrong in another welding. Science is in the specifics.
So to recap what we've uncovered, we learned that in these welds, austenite grains don't grow as spheres. They grow as elongated hexagonal prisms, a honeycomb structure that follows the heat.
And we learned that to measure them, you can't just cut one slice. You need transverse, longitudinal, and inclined cuts to build a true 3D picture.
And the big surprise, we learned that dirty steel with lots of oxygen doesn't necessarily pin the grains and keep them small. The force of crystallization is just too strong.
It blows right past the dirt, which means the cleanliness of the steel, affects the structure in ways that are much more complex than simple pinning.
Before we wrap up, I want to leave you with one thought that stuck with me for the paper. We talked about the C-axis, the length of these pencil grains.
Mm-hmm.
The paper mentions that these grains might extend all the way from the fusion boundary, where the weld meets the plate, right to the center line.
That's a massive distance in microscopic terms. We're talking about huge, continuous crystals.
Imagine that for a second. Continuous highways of crystal running through the metal. Mm-hmm. If you're a crack starting at the bottom of a weld, do you just ride that highway all the way to the top?
That is the provocative question. If the road is straight and long like these prisms, does a crack travel faster? It suggests the grain of the steel isn't just a texture, it's a potential path of least resistance. It makes you look at a welded joint and wonder which way are the pencils pointing.
And that is something to think about the next time you cross a bridge or fly in a plane. There is a geometry keeping you safe.
A hidden architecture.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the microscopic world of steel.
It was a pleasure to unpack it with you.
Keep looking closer at the world around you. You never know what shapes you'll find. Catch you next time.